This is The Omnichannel Marketer, the show where we get real about what it takes to build a brand, create a seamless omnichannel experience, and drive customer LTV across D2C, Amazon, and retail. I'm Kate Stevens, the CEO of Bridge. Join me for unfiltered conversations from the trenches of e-commerce. We'll unpack strategy and leave you with tactical advice you can use today to drive your business forward. Let's rock and roll. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Omnichannel Marketer. This is your host, Kate Stevens. I am super excited to have Preston Rutherford here today, co-founder of Chubbies, as our guest. Hi, Preston.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm doing great. Super excited to have you on.
Me too.
I would love to just like start out with your background. You know, how did you found Chubbies? You know, what are you up to today? And yeah, I would love to start there.
Awesome. So yeah, the high points. We came to Chubbies because we were four friends from college who were pretty done with working for other people. And we wanted to start something and have control of something and sort of like be in charge of our own destiny. We did not know what to start. Friends of ours were computer scientists and built amazing tech companies, but that was just not in the cards for us. So we just happened to settle on Men's Tiny Shorts as the ticket to freedom. But in the, you know, in the early days, it was, you know, we were in Silicon Valley. So it was kind of like we were working in technology in a variety of capacities, if you will, some in finance. One of us was actually in apparel and amazing. I mean, very like total rising star at Gap and Levi's. And so, I mean, he actually knew how to make clothing, but we just started it like as a nights and weekends sort of thing with the idea of, can we in a lot of ways just be the opposite of what exists currently from the status quo perspective of men's fashion? Can we just be, it was very serious at the time. Can we just be fun and ridiculous? It was very long shorted at the time. Can we just be shorter? It was very much about just sort of like being, you know, serious and too cool. And we were just like, let's just be goofy and welcoming across the board. And let's have a retro vibe rather than sort of being like super futuristic or techie. So anyways, those were just a couple of the early premises, if you will. But then the first way we got started was just sort of selling shorts out of our backpacks in San Francisco while we were either throwing Frisbee in the park or going to brunch at wherever. And, you know, people would just come up to us. And there was, I think one of the coolest things that helped us understand that there was a there was lack of apathy. You know, people were either loved it or hated it, but no one was really in the middle. And that to us was extremely exciting in that it seems like there's something that is having an impact on folks. So those were some of the earliest days and how we kind of got to starting Chubbies.
Awesome. What does Chubbies look like today?
It is part of a public company. So it is one of four brands in a brand holding company called Solo Brands, which is on the New York Stock Exchange. The ticker is DTC, which is funny, right? Because they are omnichannel brands and we are on the Omnichannel Marketing Podcast. And so sort of funny that that's the case, but
that is funny. Yeah, I definitely want to dig into that.
Yeah, but currently public company. Rainer, who is one of the co-founders, who is the one who actually knew how to make clothing, he is still there and running the brand and doing an amazing job. And it's awesome to see the continued growth of the brand. And I just couldn't be more happy and grateful to kind of like see the continued evolution of it.
So you mentioned the irony behind kind of the ticker being D2C and that this is a, you know, omnichannel podcast. It was one of the reasons I actually reached out to you to have you as a guest, because I think that you've, you know, spoken pretty openly in some of your content around kind of the importance of omnichannel. So would love to start with, you know, where did, after, you know, you were done selling out of your backpacks, where did you guys start from a channel perspective? And, you know, as you emerged into an omnichannel brand, what did that mean? You know, how did you think about it?
Sure. You know, we started, Shopify was just becoming a thing. I think we were the first Shopify Plus store, crazily enough.
Wow.
But
wait, so what year is it?
Well, the business got started in late 2011. So Shopify Plus wasn't even a thing back then. I honestly don't remember when it started. But yeah, very basically, it was just kind of like, and I'm oversimplifying and being hyperbolic intentionally, but it was like, Harley, we need all these features. Can you please, we're going to have to move on to a different platform if we don't get these kind of very essential things. And they were really good at not waiting until the last minute, but effectively it felt like on our side, waiting until the last minute to release all this functionality, like right before we would go and churn platforms. But again, I'm being mostly facetious, but yeah, it was just crazy. But the Shopify team is amazing. And I don't know, they just did so much to help us grow, like so much of the early growth and ability to scale without raising billions and billions of dollars, like totally attribute to them. But in terms of, you know, where we went next, I think a big error that, I mean, I can only speak for myself, that I made was just thinking that, and this was in like the fervor of digitally native, vertically integrated consumer brands, right? Where you had to own the transaction, you had to own the email address. That was the only way to grow in this new modern age. And I think what I learned is that that's, at least for us, I can only speak for our brand, but I think it does apply relatively generally. That's just totally ridiculous. And that is, you know, 5% of retail is like your own Shopify site generally, right? If e-com is what? 20% of overall retail, and then half of it or 60% is owned by Amazon, Walmart, Macy's, whoever, then you're just fighting for this really small pie, but you're spending 100% of your marketing dollars to build this brand that in theory should apply everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that is a backdrop to then say, well, we realized that why are we putting all this friction between us and a customer who wants to participate in the brand? So why don't we show up where people are actually shopping? Why don't we just have a little humility and just be where people are? So we started to think about showing up in person. We tried some tests with our own stores. So that's a component of the business, but found some great wholesale partners that actually gave us a lot of guidance in terms of how to go about this omnichannel expansion. But so it's effectively like the TLDR is, even if you have the opportunity to scale massively quickly up and to the right, like instantly go to a full store rollout, maybe don't do that right away. Like maybe make sure you have more demand than supply so that you can nail sell through at each step of the way and truly just be able to handle this growth in a sustainable fashion and create a strong relationship. But that's all to say that I think one of the key drivers of the growth, and I think what was extremely helpful in leading up to our acquisition in 2021 was this idea of we're starting to see great trends in omnichannel growth showing up in a variety of wonderful wholesale partners, trying to figure out a little bit of Amazon and a little bit of owned stores, but just like heavy pieces in owned digital direct to consumer. And then awesome wholesale partners that seemingly is continuing to go quite well. I think it's been mentioned in a few of the, you know, solo brands earnings calls transcripts that like Dick's Sporting Goods, for instance, is a lot of the swim product, for instance, is going into Dick's. So just broadly just being where the shopper is, making it a lot easier to if you're interested in exploring Chubbies, reducing that friction.
So how would you define omnichannel?
I would define it as being in the state to where a person who wants to purchase from you can do so across multiple channels, digital, physical, owned, third party, effectively wherever money is being given or transacted. Ideally, we would want our product to be there. I guess that's how I would define it.
So some of those early wholesale partners, who were they for Chubbies, and how did you identify who the right, you know, early wholesale partners were? And you know, you also mentioned sell-through. Would love to hear how you thought about like supporting sell-through in retail, because it's much more obvious how you do so, or the levers that you have to do so in D2C. And I think, you know, how do you think about that in retail and wholesale?
there were a few great partners, both on the sort of like, let's call it national scale, and then also on the regional scale. One that I would mention on the national scale is Nordstrom. And so I think we felt like it was a great fit from a, let's call it positioning perspective, right? I mean, I think we felt like there was a strong overlap with customer base and other brands that we would be associated with and things like that. And so that they were a wonderful, wonderful partner. And I think we felt like we were able to grow with them. And from the sell-through perspective and then how we were supporting it, I'd say we made a lot of mistakes in trying to figure that out because we were so rooted in the digital direct-to-consumer process as a method of getting our word out there. So tactically, like just doing things like just running geo-targeted, effectively direct response ads, but driving traffic to or just telling people, hey, we're now in the Nordstrom in Santa Monica or wherever. Go check it out. Which could work and could be fine. But I'd say broadly, what we started to learn more about is just like embracing broader reach and just reaching more people and just getting the word out more broadly as a way to just change more minds, right? Changing more minds where when more people think about shorts or swim trunks, they think Chubbies. And they're if they're already going to be going into Nordstrom or name your wholesale partner a Dick's, that when they see us on the shelf or on the wall, and if there's ideally a cool display associated with that, then they are instantly thinking, okay, yeah, I'm not really making a rational cost benefit decision on like cost per inch of shorts or how stretchy the fabric is, or this one is 13% off and this one's 12% off. It's more of like, okay, no, I think shorts are swim trunks. I think Chubbies. And so that I think broadly helped to drive sell through on a broader basis as we started to roll out outside of like smaller store tests to more of like a fuller, broader rollout across these partners.
So does that mean that you started more brand advertising, or did you think of the installation or, you know, setup of Chubbies within Nordstrom in and of itself providing that brand awareness, or how do you think about those things?
That the third thing I would add is just the product itself. I guess that kind of goes without saying, but just the idea that at least on the swim side in general, it is a brighter, more print-based, print-forward product. And the hang tags, like all of those details, right? I mean, really start to matter. I don't think there's anything surprising there, but just the idea that one of the beautiful things about being in person is that you can touch it, feel it, and see it, especially in the context of a variety of other product, which in general, and again, I'm biased, is maybe a bit more muted, a bit more, whatever word you want to say there. But yes, any sort of like in-store setup, so crucial, right? For just being able to tell, not tell a story necessarily, but just drive a feeling, right? A feeling and association. For us, it's weekend, it's beach, it's fun. And then yes, I think the third component is what could be defined as brand advertising, or just putting out communications generally broader that have the intention less so to get you to click and buy right now, but to actually think about this had an impact on me. This is memorable. This has created some kind of a quote unquote memory structure where when I am in market for whatever this product is, shorts, swim trunks for us, I just think of this brand. It has solved my problem. I've made the decision that that's the thing for me. So I think those are the three things that this sort of like tactically boils down to.
Yep. And what tools are available for brands that sell across channels to, you know, support sell through or to, you know, bridge the gap across that omnichannel experience?
Well, I think there are a lot of great tools. And I just remember to the earlier days, how hard it was, especially from like an inventory management perspective and from a distribution perspective and accounting perspective. Oh my gosh. So many just crazy, crazy things. But I don't know. I honestly just have to give credit to our team for going through the, I don't know if I can say hell on the podcast, but going through the HE double hockey sticks of having to implement and find all these tools and just figure all this stuff out. That is something that in no way am I an expert in. But I think foundationally where my focus primarily was just broadly just thinking about sort of like the marketing, the growth, and the branding as a way to support overall sell through, mm-hmm. and using kind of those aforementioned like three-ish sets of tactics where it was just all about the better we did to reach more people and change their minds, the better we would do on a sell through perspective. And then ideally we would hope and pray that we had all of the sort of like tools in place to support this sort of like multi-channel or omni-channel expansion.
Makes sense. And so you had owned stores, you had wholesale, a little bit of Amazon and Shopify, you know, different channels serve different roles to you, or yeah. how would you view the different roles that those channels played?
Yeah. And I think it evolved over time. So I can maybe just speak to some thoughts in the earlier days, like pre-acquisition, et cetera. So we could take Amazon as an example. There was a period where we were just scared, I think as a lot of other brands were, that the second we put our stuff on Amazon, it's like the beginning of the end. Like maybe you'll see some incremental sales, but if you do any damage in a good way, like damage being selling a lot, Amazon will see it and they'll replicate your product and then you'll be dead. Learned that clearly wasn't the case. But I think one takeaway was at that time, one of the strategies was let's just use it as a way to move through stale inventory. That was like one option that I think we started with for a bit. Another is let's actually have a specific assortment for this channel that where we would continue to train people consciously or subconsciously that if you want the latest and greatest, you got to go to our site. If you want just the, whether it be like the solid thing that are always there, you can find it on Amazon as well if you want. So I think we tried a variety of things. And I think those are kind of like the basic tactics that I guess you could try as like full assortment, partial assortment, additional inventory as like a liquidation channel that you could use even across some wholesale partners as well. And then they'll obviously negotiate with you. They might want exclusive SKUs and you might like co-design some things with their team. Like all these other things get kind of fun where you get to, I think one of the things that we learned, again, another humbling takeaway, is we are not the best at selling our product across every channel. So, but we thought like, we were like, we know our brand, we have the most context. But I think one of the key takeaways was like the folks at Dick's, the folks at Nordstrom, the folks at all of these other amazing retail partners, they know a thing or two about how to sell, about how to create an environment, about how to, because they're looking to sell stuff too. So I undervalued the alignment of interests that mm-hmm. existed across different channels to where I don't have the expertise across all, but that's okay because that's kind of like the part of the point of these partners. And that was, I think, something that was a little bit freeing and exciting at the same time. We're so, oh, okay, this is amazing. We're partners in this.
I really love that point because I do think that people sometimes are like, oh, you know, we're stealing this customer to go to D2C. Mm. And like, mm-hmm. you know, you really are aligned with your wholesale partners. Like you both want to sell a lot through that channel. There's an important element of just like acknowledging that alignment and, you know, learning from the respective channel experts. Like you are the expert in your product and they're the expert in their channel. Right. So I really like that point. From a, you know, as a category in apparel, is there anything specific that you thought about, you know, as an apparel brand that, you know, you thought about in your kind of omni-channel approach that is maybe different than a CPG brand would need to think about?
Well, sizing is never fun. Just having a ton of sizes. I know there are a bunch of variants in CPG, et cetera, but just from sort of like an inventory and forecasting perspective, sizing is always fun and interesting, as you could probably imagine. And then just like dimensions of product, right? It's just a totally different set of considerations. So like space it takes up, how to display it, whether to fold it, whether to hang it, which one you're going to hang, what the fold should look like. I don't know. All of these things are just so fascinating that you never would consider when you're just a digital only. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I loved learning about that stuff. I just thought that was so interesting. And I mean, returns, right? Totally different considerations based upon the different product category. And those are, I guess, some of the key things. But yeah, I think just sizing and just like SKU proliferation is just one of those things that is just like very, very interesting. But at the same time, we, I think, had the easier version by having an elastic waist. Like if you have sized waistbands, which we did sometimes, that's even, you know, orders of magnitude more difficult. But that's always fun, especially like there's just so much data, but just on a geo basis, like what sizes, what sort of like size run do you need here in this retailer versus this retailer in this geo? I don't know. All those things are just things that you did. And obviously your buyer helps you with all that stuff, but it's still a very fascinating thing.
Yeah, for sure. And your next business ended up being returns related, correct? So,
well, yeah. So while we were at Chubbies, the whole returns and exchanges experience was very rough for both for a customer and for just internal resource allocation and on the P&L. And with the TLDR being so many returns could have been exchanges, and then so many customer service back and forths could have not even needed to happen in the first place. So, I mean, just to paint a picture, because I think we take it for granted, but it used to be you'd email in, say, I want a return. Customer service would say, okay, sounds good. Can you just send me a picture of the product so I can make sure you didn't violate the return policy? Person then attaches a photo. Okay, we see whether or not the return policy was violated. We then send back a manual PDF attachment of a shipping label. They then have to print it out, blah, blah, blah. So, crazy, right? I mean, just like not fun for the customer, not fun for the amount of CX tickets it created. And again, more returns could have been exchanges. So we built what is now Loop Returns as an internal tool to solve this problem, because we would just like to build technology that solve problems. And it was just intended to be an internal tool at the beginning. But then other brands reached out and just said, effectively, we're sharing the same problem. Can we have this? And the thought hadn't crossed our mind, but kind of stumbled into it and pulled that thread. And a lot has happened between now or then and now, but it's now seemingly killing it, doing really well in the Shopify ecosystem and beyond. And it's awesome to see.
One of the things I like to ask is something that our guests are bold or passionate about. So would love to ask you, you know, what that topic is for you.
Totally. So I'm passionate about a variety, but I think as it relates to this particular podcast, as it relates to Omnichannel and just marketing in general and building your brand, one of the biggest things that we learned outside of the power of expanding channel was the way you're able to do that is by building up a brand that has resonance on some level of scale. And what we learned is that it wasn't necessarily using the same exact tactics that worked so well in driving short-term sales on our website. And that whole thing of this over-reliance on bottom of funnel, digital, paid social tactics, and how it kind of can lead to a situation where you're just so dependent on those ads to drive business happened to us. And I think it happens to a lot of these upstart brands that are mainly direct-to-consumer. So one of the things I'm just really passionate about is we were able to figure out, we had to, because we would have gone out of business if we didn't, figured out how to combat that, where we got a little bit more revenue resilience. We were able to, quote unquote, build our brand, which just effectively meant more people would purchase from us without having to be prompted by like a bottom funnel conversion ad. But a key component of that was going multi-channel or omni-channel, where because we were doing all of this marketing to just impact a lot of people, so few of those people actually click. And then of those people who click, so few of them actually buy on your site. But you're impacting the minds of all of these people with your brand, even if it's like straight down the fairway direct response. So by going omni-channel and just being where more people are already shopping, it was one of the key contributors to increasing our baseline of resilient revenue that becomes so crucial to a potential acquirer, like just fundamental asset value. So I think that's one of the things that I'm super passionate about at this stage is, gosh, I was so on this end of the spectrum where it was just all about put a dollar into Meta, get $5 out, own that email address, do everything digitally, to just sort of like the playbook that has been in existence for a long time, which is, yes, increase your mental availability, increase that brand power, that salience, that awareness, but then increase your physical availability as well and have those match, have that physical availability match that brand equity that you're building so that you can achieve the highest quality, long-term profitable growth, not just like building something for the short term. So I think that's something that I'm really passionate about. Kind of gets me up in the morning because I really want to share this story with as many, you know, brand owners, brand operators as possible, because for better or for worse, Chubbies being maybe like the most discretionary purchase on earth, like selling to men little itty bitty bright tiny shorts, we dealt with a lot of this stuff, I think, earlier than most. But it does seem like, especially now, like with macro issues and things like that, election year makes it really even more expensive to advertise digitally. I think a lot of folks are feeling navigating some of these issues as well and just trying to figure out, how do I get to that, either that next level, or how do I think about increasing profitability, or how do I think about long-term longevity, sustainability? Should I go into wholesale? Is that actually going to be the death of my brand, or is it actually one of the best things that I can do? Is it actually going to help build and strengthen my, all of these questions we had. And so I'm really passionate about just trying to share my mistakes and learnings in this realm in hopes that it can help a few folks not have to go through as much pain as I did.
I love that. So moving into our lightning round. So just, you know, some quick answers. Favorite omnichannel brand other than Chubbies?
What do I love? I was going to say Lululemon, which I think is a good answer. Let's see if it's a great answer. Yeah, I think Lululemon's amazing. Apple. I love Apple. The Apple Store experience is absolutely fantastic. Their website experience is absolutely fantastic. I mean, obviously they're Apple, but
they're
beautiful.
Everything about their
customer. And then I think the other like underappreciated is like how they reach different customer types and different product types using all of the different channels. So like you find them at Walmart, you'll find them at all these like other places where you just wouldn't even expect. And I don't know if they sort of like sponsor like the refurbished line, but just the way that they can reach so many different people where the brand still has like a premium association with it. But the only way you can reach the massive scale is by being everywhere. And I think they're a great example of how being in more places doesn't necessarily mean you have to tarnish your brand, which I think is an assumption that we also had of, oh, we would not partner with this potential retailer, even if it could be like accretive in the P&L, but we would be like, oh, they're not a fit. That's not a good, that would degrade our brand. I think there's some truth to it, but maybe less so than I originally thought. And I think Apple is an example. It brings that to life.
Yeah, it's a really good point. What do you wish you could change about our industry?
Oh, that's a good question. What do I think we could change about the industry? I think, and this is probably not, I think discounts should be illegal.
Illegal or legal?
Illegal. Like you should just have the price, and it's just like such a drug. And just from like the perspective of brand strength, and my point, my macro point is, if brands knew the actual cost of just like persistent promoing and discounting, they probably would do a lot less of it, but you just can't feel the long-term erosion in your business. You can feel the short-term upside that it gets you, the short-term lift it gets you, but you can't feel how it is just a pull forward of lower margin and you're just stealing from tomorrow for today. So that's sort of like a totally facetious, again, hyperbolic answer to a question that is probably a horrible answer, but that's my thought.
Thank you. Favorite podcast?
Right. Well, yours, of course. And then in a distant second, it would be the Founders podcast. David Senra. It's really great.
Okay. Favorite newsletter?
I really enjoy the Brew newsletters are pretty solid, like Marketing Brew. I think they put some good stuff into it. So I'll say that for now.
Okay. Favorite social media channel?
LinkedIn. Super great. I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot.
I love LinkedIn. Yeah, me too. Favorite book?
Oh, that's a great question. I really love How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it taught me a lot.
My dad gifted me that book.
Oh, nice.
Favorite event that you're excited about attending this year?
That's a great question. Totally like not a professional thing, but my wife just told me she wants to host a silent disco in our backyard. And I think that's going to be an awesome event. And I really look forward to attending it.
I think that sounds like a blast. Preston, where can our listeners connect with you?
Mentioned LinkedIn, but on LinkedIn, just Preston Rutherford. And in between my first and last name is a little shorts emoji. And I'm trying to write about some of this stuff that we talked about today with the aim of just trying to be helpful to folks. And then, of course, if you're ever in the market for some shorts, feel free to go to chubbyshorts.com.
Awesome. Preston, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate it. Thanks for putting this podcast together. It's absolutely awesome. And thanks for the opportunity to chat with you today.
Awesome. If you liked this podcast, follow me and The Bridge Page on LinkedIn and Twitter for hot takes and tactical advice. If you really loved today's episode, we'd love a review on the podcasting platform of your choice, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thanks for listening.